Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:43 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 21st. I thought we'd kick off with Zoom. They just reported earnings. The stock is up about 4% in the after hours, and it's a pretty well developed base formation. So, I think veteran subscribers will be very familiar with my antipathy towards the share, but I think a lot of the bad news has probably been priced in at this stage, and the company is back in the region of where it was trading before the pandemic. So we might then begin to think about, well, maybe they can grow. Now, it's not going to grow in anywhere like the kind of pace it did during the pandemic, but that doesn't mean it can't be a reasonably profitable business. One of the biggest challenges for these types of businesses is that there's a lot of competition, and none of them are perfect. And I've been trialing out a few. One thing about Zoom is that people generally have a lot of complaints about connections. And then I was trialing out Microsoft Teams this morning, and it was very patchy, and the microphones weren't working very well. The service that I found the most reliable is Discord, but Discord only allows for chat rooms to be created, and then you don't have a dedicated one, and they do have problems with people coming in and squatting in chat rooms, so then that's also an issue. But certainly, when we think about Zoom, they are among the market leaders, and the share has got clearly distinct base formation characteristics. So when it eventually does break on the upside, it's going to be a clear sign of a return to demand dominance. And if it can sustain a move above that 200-day moving average, well, then we might conclude that the dissolution phase has ended, and perhaps that it can appreciate from here. But I think that expecting it to go back to 600 anytime soon might be a little bit ambitious. Then, of course, the video chat feature for Microsoft really doesn't move the needle. But the share is now steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is about where we should anticipate some support starting to come back in. If we're in a bull market environment overall, then generally speaking, some consolidation in the region of the previous peak is to be expected, and that might last a few months. So we could be bouncing here and back up to 350 and spend a bit of time just going sideways. Now, of course, what happens in the wider environment, particularly with interest rates, borrowing costs, and the knock-on effect for consumers, is going to have an effect. But then there are also what I would consider to be esoteric types of events. So, for example, Tesla has been promising that they're going to release their Cybertruck for about 2 years, but they are now starting to load vehicles onto trucks. Now, there's a good chance that those ones are probably going to be for crash tests. But it does suggest that if you're crash testing vehicles, you have settled on the final parameters for that vehicle and you're looking to proof it up. So I think there is there's at least the beginnings of enthusiasm around the potential that they are going to release the most hotly anticipated vehicle anywhere. And that is certainly helping the share to steady here. It's in the region of the 200-day moving average and also the upper side of the underlying range. There's clearly the potential that Tesla can rebound here regardless of whatever else happens, because it's probably got a lot of pent-up demand. They've got several hundred thousand pre-orders. And then there's also the potential that your potential Tesla buyer has not been making the purchase because they were waiting for the Cybertruck to come out. So there's a captive audience there. But then, of course, you have the potential that it's going to cannibalize the business of companies like Ford and GM. And they have both pulled back really quite acutely over the course of the last month. But then, of course, they also have these very contentious labor relations negotiations on their plate as well. And The number being thrown around is somewhere in the region of 80 billion. Well, when you're a company with a market cap of 47 billion, then that's really rather a lot of money. And of course, it's spread out over a very long period of time, but it does help to highlight why, with such low valuations and a high competitive yield, the share isn't doing better. And GM pretty much has the exact same pattern of underperformance over the last while. Now, there's a lot of enthusiasm as we head into earnings for Nvidia. So it's going to be after market on Wednesday. And the share was up in really quite a dynamic manner in here today as well. So that's very clear confirmation of support in the region of 400. There's obviously the expectation that we're going to have a blowout earnings. And that's for the second quarter. But of course, what people will be looking for is the guidance and just how much competition there's going to be from some of the company's biggest customers. Because you've got Amazon, Microsoft, you've got several of the Chinese tech companies. They're all developing their own artificial intelligence chips. And Nvidia doesn't produce its own chips. They're all contracted out. So they really do trade on their intellectual property. And there's obviously an expense that comes with success in that everyone else wants to get a little bit of that party. So certainly I think the $400 level is going to be a very big level that needs to hold if the enthusiasm around the share is going to persist. Now, when we look at what's going on in the bond markets, well, we've had a couple of interesting developments in here today. The first is that the 10-year yield is popping on the upside. So it's up another 8 basis points, closing at a new recovery high. We haven't seen at the 10-year yield at 4.3% in an awfully long time. So I think when we start to think then about exactly what's going on here, this is less about inflation. We're back now at an area that we haven't seen since, well, really before the financial crisis. Back then, there was a lot of questioning around inflation, and it was commodity price inflation, and it was being fueled by outsized global economic growth, which was being spearheaded by the emerging markets, but most particularly China. Those were the years when China was putting on 10% a year. Whereas today, there's a real fear about ingrained inflation. And a lot of the moderation in inflationary pressures has been because commodity prices went down. But now we're still in an environment where employment is very high. Then wage demand growth has been quite robust. And there's still a lot of money floating around following the big swell of additional cash printed during the pandemic. So now there is the bigger question about how is the government going to fund itself? And what are the aims in terms of the fiscal deficit? And obviously, this is a problem. So on the one hand, the Fed has its dual mandate, but they do have an additional mandate, which is to ensure that there is a ready market for treasuries. And obviously, the US Treasury wants to ensure that there is a relatively stable environment, but they still have a big requirement to issue new debt. So this is putting upward pressure. Now, I'm not saying that there is a direct correlation between the upward pressure that we're seeing on US treasuries and the downward pressure we're seeing in the Chinese bond yield. But the Chinese bond yield is down to 2.5%, and it's still trending downwards. Now, we're coming back into the lows that were posted back in 2020. And China has been really quite clear in stating that they don't want to stimulate, and they're more worried about the excessive cost of housing and the social ills that could foment, most particularly if it resulted in any kind of real threat to the power and security of the Communist Party. So there's obviously the potential here that the Chinese are going to do only what's necessary in order to forfend the possibility, at least, that there could be a property crash. And the banking sector took a leg lower in here today in China. So they didn't lower the lending rate as much as the market was hoping. And now we have the A600 banks index dropping down through the 12,500 level. And we're going to have to see a clear upward dynamic like the one we saw in the middle of July in order to confirm that a demand is returning here. Now, the renminbi was a little steadier in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. But it did reverse some earlier weakness. And I would expect that there's going to be a little bit of steadier action here. Now, the reality is that if they are doing what's necessary to support the bond market, then that should help to support the currency. But it's not going to be great news for the health of the Chinese economy. Now, I think, though, that we are starting to see a little bit of steadier action in copper, and it is in the region of the lows from late June. So, I don't think that we're going to get a big recovery here until we see clear evidence of some more convincing stimulative action coming out of China. Regardless of what happens in terms of the Inflation Reduction Act or any of the aspirations of the green lobby. Now, what was also interesting today was the movements that we had in both gold and silver. So gold was a little steadier, hovering here around the $1,900 area. It's the lower side of the range, and also in the region of that low from late June. So we have quite a number of examples here of prices beginning to steady in the region of those late June lows. Now, it is below the 200-day moving average, and it's been a somewhat deeper correction than we might have hoped for, as it is testing the upper side of this 3-year range. What gold needs is for real rates to begin to trend downwards. So it's the direction of travel for real rates, and then on top of that, a weaker dollar. So with the I guess with the 10-year treasury popping on the upside, and then China strengthening its currency. Well, then we've de definitely not seeing a big surge in demand for dollars, and it was very mildly in negative territory today. I think the most important thing here is that the dollar has failed to sustain moves above the 200-day moving average and to break the downtrend on successive occasions. So, if this is another one of those, we should expect that there will be a downward dynamic. And I think a lot's going to hinge on what happens with oil. And oil prices were a little bit negative in here today, so reversing an earlier advance. We're in this very narrow range where we have resistance in the region of the peaks from January through April, but we're starting to see support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it has broken the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. So this is, I think, where you have this big argument going on. You've got really compressed trading, but it really is all about the direction of growth in the global economy relative to the slowdown that we're seeing, and then the ability of OPEC to continue to pressure prices higher. And so far, at least, it is holding this region of the 200-day moving average. Now, of course, if that decline in oil prices was the primary reason why inflationary pressure is moderated, well, then we would have to anticipate that if oil prices are breaking on the upside, then it's going to put upward pressure on inflationary measures. And I think that is also part of the reason why we've had a little correlation here between the 10-year yield and oil. Because if oil prices break on the upside and inflation proves more sticky than anyone wants, well, then they're not going to have much choice but to continue raising rates. And eventually that would have some impact on the wider market. What was particularly interesting today in the stock market was that we had those rebounds in some of those tech shares, and that helped to propel the Nasdaq. But then the Dow Jones was in negative territory. And That is, I think, really quite clearly putting some pressure on the competitive value of the yields that we're getting from blue chips. When interest rates are rising, then they're not raising their dividends as fast. So then the Dividend Aristocrats Index is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. Now we have this V-shaped recovery that began following the retest of the 1,000-day moving average in the middle of last year, and it has held a sequence of higher reaction lows since then. So we're at a potential area of support. Then, when we go to the other side of the equation and look at the technology sector, well, we've had the moves in Tesla and Nvidia, but also we've started to see that Bitcoin is beginning to steady. Now, obviously, we've had this big return of volatility, but that's not especially volatile for the asset class, and it's now right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, all the way through the big bull market until the middle of 2022, the price had never fallen below the 1,000-day moving average. And then it not only failed, but then it dropped down to break below the peaks put in 2017. And it had never done that before either. It had never taken out a previous bubble peak. Well, at the bare minimum, that tells us that the trend for Bitcoin is not as consistent today as it had been in the past. And therefore, the predictions about where prices will go in future are also less reliable. But it is testing the region of the recent low, also put in late June, and the region of the 1,000-day and 200-day moving averages. So I think it is reasonable that we should get at least some pause and consolidation in this area. The primary reason why people are interested right now is because of speculation about whether we're going to see spot-priced ETFs permissioned. And there is speculation that if they do get permissioned, that it's not going to be one, but that there will be several permissioned at the same time. And the only exchange that is sufficiently large to deal with that flow is Coinbase, and the share is now steadying in the region of the 200-day moving average. It had a very well-defined base formation between about May of 2022 and July of this year, and now it's starting to steady here once more. If it can hold this region, then that's going to be really quite bullish overall. So, even though we have this tightening monetary conditions, there's still plenty of appetite out there for speculative activity. And I think that is really quite a clear reflection of the fact that there's still a lot of money sloshing around, and that this is going to take time to work its way through. Now, the thing that I pay most clear attention to, and I know that this must sound like being a broken record, but the yield curve spread is now starting to trend higher. It has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it's coming from an incredibly deep position of inversion. And there are three pieces to this cycle. One is the initial inversion, the depth of the inversion, and the third is the reassertion, so the move out of inversion into positive territory. And I think that is where we are most likely headed. And that also happens to be when we get the most selling pressure in the stock market. So I do think that as we look at the potential here, that prices are steadying in the region of their respective trend means, or that so far we've had reasonably steady consolidations, then we have potentially now a higher reaction low. That this is I think, an opportune place to, if not to impose a stop, but to then start to think about, well, is this trend going to look particularly consistent if it can if it can't sustain a move up from last week's low? If we start to see markets coming back down through the 200-day moving average, well, at least then we will have confirmation that we're moving into a more volatile, rangy period. And generally speaking, after a period of time where the market has traded below the 200-day moving average, it has always found support in the region of the 1,000-day. And right now, that 1,000-day moving average is 2,800 points away. So that's quite a significant move. But we're not going to see a significant decline until we see that the earnings start to roll over, that the experience of consumers turns from tightening their belts and only spending on luxuries or travel, and rather that they stop spending altogether. And I think that is in the future. And I think the chances of a soft landing, well, we don't have good evidence of them historically. Now, obviously, it's easy to argue that after the pandemic that there's going to be a different environment, that it was a one-off activity. But the reality is that when you print a ton of money and then you take it away, well, eventually there's going to be pressure found. But then I think the biggest counter-argument to there being a big problem is that there isn't a lot of pressure on the high yield spread. And it's steadying here around the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But let's just remember that the 10-year yield is at 4 1/3 and the high yield spread is at 4.45, which means that your average high yield bond currently has a yield of about 4.8 or 4.78. Percent. And that is probably quite attractive for a large percentage of investors. So the most important thing is that the refinancing risk is primarily focused in the government sector, whereas the corporate sector used the incredible tight yield or tight spreads and low yields of the pandemic to refinance, which means that generally, if the average duration on a high yield bond is somewhere around 5 years, it means that we're not going to have a big refinancing wall on the majority of high yield debt until we get out to about 2025 or 26. And that would take us sufficiently far out from the pandemic that a lot of the excess liquidity will have been burned off. Now, obviously, we're still in an environment where European stocks have been resurgent. Japanese stocks have been resurgent. They are currently experiencing a little bit of pause and consolidation. But at the times when we get really strong trends in emerging markets, where the emerging markets and non-US assets do best, when commodities do best, and where value clearly outperforms growth, that's when we have both negative real interest rates as well as a declining dollar. And that also means that gold does well. So we have lots of these historically undervalued assets relative to the US or relative to growth or relative to just the US economy generally. Well, they're not going to fire, they're not going to reverse until we see the dollar rolling over. And that's not immediately apparent. I do think that the dollar is very overvalued, that on a cyclical basis, it has the clear potential to trend down over the balance of the next decade, but it's not doing it right away. And therefore, the levelized currency just US dollar performance of any asset is going to be impeded until we see the dollar, in fact, rolling over. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.